You're listening to Atheistically Speaking.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode, we're on 14. It's been a good run we've had here. I need to make a few announcements, I guess. Not really announcements, but you may notice that David's not here. No, I don't know if you can notice that, but I usually greet him at the beginning of the show, but some of you may have seen on the Facebook. If you're not on the Facebook, get on it, guys. Come on, facebook.com/atheisticallyspeaking. I was recording an episode of my other podcast, and at the very end of it, literally as I was just about finished, I was wrapping it up, I bumped a glass of water, which spilled on my MacBook Pro, and it shut off, and that's where all the files are. That's where all the everything is for podcasts. So I was pretty panicked, and it was rough. Everything I read said I needed to let it dry forever. So this is why we missed a week. The episode on Monday didn't address this because we had already recorded that. But I'm just addressing it now. We took a week off because I just couldn't. I didn't have anything because my computer was dead, and I was waiting for it to dry. And then it still didn't work, so I had to take it in. So it ended up being the best option to just wait a week. But because of that, and because David has a really really tough schedule, because he's a really hardworking guy. He works two jobs. And he's also, I believe he's studying to take the GRE. He's got a lot going on. It is very, very difficult to find the time, but he does. But unfortunately, because my computer was messed up all the way through through the time that we were set to record, until just a few days ago. So he's not going to be, basically, long story short, David is not in this episode. But that's only because the recording stuff lives with me. If it was the other way around, then probably David would do a short episode without me. So I want to take the time to deal with a few odds and ends. We've now gotten a flood of comments, messages, and now it's gotten to the point where we're definitely, you know, we can't address them all. So thank you so much for giving them. Continue to leave them, because we will, as always, take like the top couple and talk about them. But I saw I won't say a critical exactly, but it was a comment that I found interesting. So I want to deal with this one now because it's a little old. And so I want to catch up while David's not here a little bit. So, the commenter, they don't have their real name, I don't think, because it's Bangs Naughty Bits. But hey, that's their Facebook profile name, so we'll go with that. They first said, great, great show, which, hey, I always appreciate that. So far, a good start, Bangs Naughty Bits. My favorite parts were all the times Jake said he was all about diversity and inclusion, except for all those rat bastards that don't believe his particular political agenda. So this was about when Jake came on, and obviously. Then he said, I get more respect as a moderate Republican who is an atheist from the Republicans than I get as an atheist who's a moderate Republican from the atheists. For certain values of atheists, perhaps. Regardless, great show. You got me to log on to Facebook again, and that's saying something. Oh, okay. Well, with a name like that, I see why you don't log in a lot. No. I'm sure it's just a fake name because this person doesn't like Facebook. So that comment, actually, at the time, I mean, it was a good point, and it made me think, I think we've done a little bit too much, possibly, and I'm curious. Oh, another thing I was going to say about David not being here. When we get to record again, priority one, hopefully, will be him commenting on anything in this episode that he wanted to. So hopefully it'll be like, this is almost like a two-parter. Like, first part is just me, my half, you know, and then David can hopefully catch up and comment on stuff. So that's another part of it. But I'll be curious to see what David thinks. But I, for one, when I read this comment, it did wake me up a little to the fact that there's definitely a Republican atheist segment. And honestly, I hope I'm not, you know, being too revisionist here. But I do think that was kind of my point, mostly, was that we can't define atheism by more than lack of God, pretty much, or maybe like secular ideas. But once we go further into income disparity and different stances like that, then we start to exclude people who don't believe in God. And it's weird to be excluding people who don't believe in God from a group called atheism. It's a little it's a little counterintuitive to me. So hopefully I'm not being too revisionist, and you guys can call me on it if you want, if you got a different impression from what I said. But I do believe that I was more on this guy's side. Not that I definitely am not a Republican, though I do have certain conservative ideas, I think, but I, of course, also liberal ones. It's mainly, you know, it's pretty hard to be like a social conservative and be an atheist, I think. I think the social issues are mostly – they're mostly atheists. It would be hard for me to believe there would be a whole lot of atheists, if any, that are socially conservative. That would be odd. I'm sure everybody exists because it's a big world. It's a big country, but that would be very odd to me. And then I also happened to hear, I was listening to an episode of Dogma Debates, and David Silverman, who is the – oh, shoot. I shouldn't have started saying that. He's the president of American Atheists, right? Yeah, I think so. I'm not going to fact check that. I think he is. I panicked that I was going to forget the exact name of the organization, but I believe that's what it is. And he expressed that they had the whole CPAC thing, which I'm sure many of you have heard of. They – tried to submit, no, not submit. They tried to get a table, and they had a table, actually. They had a table at the CPAC, which is the Conservative Political Action Committee, I would guess. And then it caused some sort of shitstorm, and then CPAC rejected their table. And so, but David Silverman was saying, his whole angle was, look, there's a significant segment of atheists who may have some conservative values, but the religious part of the Republican Party is alienating them, et cetera, et cetera. And so his angle was that he wanted atheists to be included in CPAC or maybe as a voice in the conservative party. And he said that he's conservative on some issues, and I found that interesting. But basically, Bangs, if I may call you Bangs Naughty Bits, Mr. Naughty Bits, Mr. and Mrs. Naughty Bits, Ms. Yes, I think that it is – I understand that it's – with atheism, I mean such a large percentage of them are liberal, and with how polarized our country is, it's not surprising to me that a group of liberal people mostly would be not very welcoming of a Republican. I mean that's – sort of how things are. I'm not saying that that's ideal necessarily, but it doesn't surprise me. But I think it is an issue because when you're an atheist, like you are, because you've said you are, it's interesting to it sucks because you say, oh, I'm a Republican. Not that I say this, but I'm speaking from your point of view. You say, oh, I'm a Republican, and instantly you get all the ire and the hatred that liberals typically have for Republicans. But that's a little unfair because I'm assuming you're mostly socially liberal. And it's really, really they should focus their anger or energy rather on just the conservative parts of your political view. So that sucks. And when you made this comment, I thought it was very, you know, pretty eye-opening. Although I will say of all the people who were in this discussion, I think that I was the most toward this side. So that's it. All this is to say that I think I want to have a show about this sometime in the future, but you know, there are 200 things I want to have a show about. So who knows when this will happen, but we have lots of episodes planned. We have lots of topics we always want to talk about, but one of them, I would be nice if maybe we'll try to find a there's a couple examples that people have given of Republican atheists, and it would be nice to find one to speak to us. That would be pretty cool. And then one more quick thing on that. I think that David Silverman's argument was a little flawed because the obvious response that the CPAC would have, and I don't know if they said this or not, they probably wouldn't come out and say it, but the fact is, I mean, it's just a sheer numbers game. The number of atheists that CPAC or the Republican Party in general is likely alienating is probably far and away fewer than the number of religious people that they are pandering to and whose votes they are getting. So it's a little weird. I'm not trying to get too into political theory, but I thought that was maybe an obvious kind of flaw with his argument. I don't think they're going to be interested in adding a few, you know, tens of thousands of voices in exchange for possibly alienating millions. So I understand what he's trying to do, and he also tries to grab headlines a lot, which I like. We've decided on this. Well, I don't know if we've decided, but one theme of this show has been that it's interesting to have all kinds of atheists with all kinds of different messages. So, okay. So I think that's all I'll say on that topic. Okay, now to get to the article by David Robertson, and it's on the website christiantoday.com, an advertiser of ours. No. it should be pretty quick, so as much as I don't want to have more of my voice reading, just pretend this is David's voice reading. Should Christians be nice in dealing with nasty atheists? There is a fascinating YouTube video of Richard Dawkins, scroll down to watch, I will play that later, speaking at a Rally for Reason in the USA, where in front of his devoted followers, he urges his fellow atheists to mock and ridicule the religious in public, to challenge the claims of religion with contempt. Okay, I'm going to play that now. Since he's referencing it then, we should just play it then. So here it is.
Mock them, ridicule them. In public. Don't fall for the convention that we're all too polite to talk about religion. Religion is not off the table. Religion is not off limits. Religion makes specific claims about the universe which need to be substantiated and need to be challenged and, if necessary, need to be ridiculed with contempt.
Makes me want to say, I think I'll just say now before continuing, I haven't been able to find the full video because I'm always, you know, is it a coincidence that this video starts right at mock them, ridicule them? Because it makes it the heading and the what this guy has already said makes it sound like he's talking about religious people. But I would be very surprised if he hadn't said, you know, religious ideas or something like that, because later on he targets the ideas. He says, if, you know, these claims they make need to be ridiculed. I mean, look, I don't want to be accused of having some irrational faith in Richard Dawkins. Maybe I tend to agree a lot more with what he says than I think a lot of atheists nowadays that I hear from do. Like, it seems like he's almost not cool anymore to be a fan of. I think that we've referenced it before. I think there's quite a bit of not wanting to be accused of being part of a herd, you know, when it comes to Richard Dawkins. And I think that, like this guy is doing, this David Robertson, like he already uses language, you know, his devoted followers. He already uses language to try to make it appear as a religion as much as he can, because that's what his angle against atheism is. All of this is to say, it's possible that he said you should mock religious people. I would bet that if someone said, I have the full video, what do you guess that he's talking about? I would still guess pretty confidently that he didn't say mock the people. But at a certain point, it becomes moot, and I'll talk about that later. I'll go on with the article. As anyone who peruses internet comment columns or any of the various social media outlets will know, Professor Dawkins' advice is frequently followed, so much so that it seems as though the motto of what I term the new fundamentalist atheist, there you go, guys, is there is no God and I hate him. I don't know why this page has to keep refreshing. It's very frustrating. So he's labeled us, or I don't know, atheists, I guess, new fundamentalist atheists. Very insulting language, of course, but we'll deal with that later. How should Christians respond to the nastiness that results? For some, the answer is straightforward. We should be really, really nice. When you consider what nice means, such an approach does make some kind of sense. According to the OED, nice equals pleasant, agreeable, or attractive. Surely that is what we want to be as we seek to adorn the gospel? Recently, I debated well-known American atheists on premier Christian radio's Unbelievable program. Matt Dillahunty is the host of an online TV show called The Atheist Experience. Well, I think it's public access. I don't know why he says online. I'm pretty sure it's public access, but I could be wrong. In which he and his co-presenters take calls from religious people, mainly Christians, and then proceed to argue and fulfill Dawkins' mandate to mock them. This is something, hey, if anybody's a big, I didn't have a ton of time to watch a bunch of old episodes, but I've seen it a few times, and I don't think that anyone mocks Christians on that show. I think that there could be times when they express some scorn toward their beliefs and toward the assertions they're making. And a lot of times they say unflattering things about the atheists. You know, the Christians that call into that show will say rather insulting things to the atheists. So if anyone wants to challenge that or confirm it, please send me a comment or a message or something. If you're a big Atheist Experience viewer, because I kind of think that show also has nothing to do with a Dawkins mandate. It's just not even – it's, again, an unfair allegation to make that Matt Dillahunty is somehow just following some mandate from Dawkins. That show's been going on forever. And I believe Dillahunty has been on for 7 or 8 years. It has nothing to do with Dawkins mandating this. I don't think he used to be religious, and then he eventually turned atheist. And there's a lot to his backstory, and it's very belittling, I think, of Matt's experience to say that's what he heard some mandate from our Lord and Savior Richard Dawkins, and that's what he's off to do. But anyway, okay, I'll move on. That's going to take me forever to get through this. Some people thought that having Matt and myself on the same show would be interesting. For me, it certainly was. We recorded two programs that were feisty and robust, a little too much for some Christians. The reaction was astonishing, producing one of the largest responses to responses Unbelievable, which is the show, has ever seen. The number one complaint from the atheists who wrote in was that I was rude and nasty, as well as being ignorant and stupid. This response intrigued me. Why was there so little concern about what was said and so much about how it was said? I suspect that the atheists were used to Matt doing his own show and being rude, mocking and abrasive to Christians, which they loved. But when the boot was on the other foot, there was an outrage. I would deny that I was rude to Matt, or that I used ad hominem, or even that I mocked him, although when he claimed that the Bible was untrue because Jesus got the properties of salt wrong, it was hard to resist. I accept fully that I was robust. Well, yeah, of course, when you use a word that's positive, like robust, when you spin it to be robust, you're going to accept fully. I don't know. I think he should have said he believes rather that he was robust. It's kind of trickery to assign a separate word, like more flattering word to it, and say, I accept that fully. I was robust. Anyway, I did not let him get away with some of the more ridiculous statements and accusations. I challenged him on assertions that he made, such as the usual NFA, which is his stupid, I already forget, something fundamentalist, atheist, new fundamentalist atheist allegation that fundamentalist atheist that Hitler was a fundamentalist atheist. We really get into the old atheist texts and we interpret them literally. That's what we fundamentalist atheists do. It's sorry, that's a I need David on here to temper my sometimes the frustration that I get. I'm a little more. We're out of whack here. We're out of balance because he tends to be a lot more measured. I tend to be more of the impatient with religious people. So we'll try to get back to that balance soon, promise. And I tried to get him to go to the logical conclusion of his beliefs. It did not surprise me that those who shared those beliefs were more than a little upset. But what upset me were the number of Christians who basically agreed and came up with the argument. That's not nice, and you won't win people for Jesus like that. What can one say in response to such an allegation? To reply by saying, I'm actually really nice, comes across as both lacking humility and a bit wet. In fact, there really is no response to the you're not nice accusation, except perhaps to point out that it's not nice to make it. Uh-huh. The problem here is that so many Christians get confused between the fruit of spirit and niceness. Surely Elijah mocking the prophets of Baal. Oh, I didn't realize this was. I thought it was going to be over. It's almost over. So he references here some biblical examples of people not being nice. Oh, here's a good line. Richard Dawkins relies on Christians being too nice to fight back. Oh, that's golden. This is using nice in the sense of the original Latin necius, ignorant. Christians go far too often come across as stupid and coy, even though we think we are coming across as pleasant and agreeable. We need to stand up to the verbal bullies, speak up for Christ and his honor, and be prepared to always give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. Let me see. Why do we need to be robust? I think I might skip the rest of this. If we remove the thread of Christianity from the garment of our culture, it will unravel and the consequences will be devastating, not for our own sakes, but for the sake of the whole of the society. We need Christians who will boldly, graciously, and lovingly take on the mockers, deceivers, and destroyers of the new atheist fundamentalism, because it is not the indestructible Church of Christ they will destroy, but rather the countless lives of those who will listen to their myths. Just because Christians were too nice to speak out. So the first thing I want to say is, this is like so many things I've read from the Christian perspective, where after I'm done reading it, if I were a space alien, I would think, wow, these poor Christians, what are they, 3%, 4% of the population? They have such a hard time. I can't believe they're still surviving after years of tyranny. That they've lived under the atheist rule. You know, it's the first thing that needs to be pointed out, and I think so many of you will, of course, have already realized that for so long in Western society, religion has been in control of everything. It was dangerous to even say you were an atheist. Maybe not in America per se, but throughout a lot of history, it's been very dangerous to be anything other than the currently in power sect of Christianity. So there's a lot of that goes on, which is very frustrating. But anyway, just even disregarding those couple quick observations. I thought a lot about this, and I was trying to think of what it means to be rude and nasty. Well, first thing I did was I listened to the debate. I encourage you to. It's a little annoying to find the website that the Unbelievable podcast is on. It's kind of you have to click through a lot of things to find it. But yeah, look up the Unbelievable podcast. It's premier.org.uk/unbelievable, but just Google it. I listened to it. It's very long, but I recommend it. It's very fascinating. And I wanted to see if this guy was just in his evaluation of himself. And I'm not going to play too much. I don't want to turn this into, evaluating this debate, because that takes it a completely different direction. I could go down that rabbit hole, and I could do that all night, because I find that really interesting.
I'd like to take this time to make a few humble requests of our wonderful listening audience. Please give us a review on iTunes. It helps the show immensely. Also, give us a like on Facebook.com/atheisticallyspeaking. And give us a follow on Twitter, username @SpeakAtheism. If an episode sparks a thought or comment, leave it on the Facebook page and the guys might discuss it on the air. Thank you and enjoy the rest of the show.
So I'm going to play one clip here that I think is a good example of when I listen to the whole debate, and you guys should listen too if you want. What I found to be a problem was not that he was I'll talk about this after, but this was an example of arrogance. There was a lot of arrogance, and I don't even want to say now that that's for sure a bad thing when we're dealing with this. So I don't want to cast too much judgment on that, but that was what this clip demonstrates. And then I'm going to talk a little bit more about that after the clip.
Ask Matt a question that I was actually asked at Cambridge University. I'd be interested to know his response to it, but can I just go back over a couple of the things that he was saying? I'm furiously scribbling notes here because it's just fascinating. I'd said initially that one of the reasons I couldn't be an atheist was because I just didn't have the faith, and Matt's faith astounds me. I'm so skeptical about what the faith that he has. For example, well-being. Whose well-being? You know, if I'm a Wall Street banker, whose well-being am I thinking about? I'm thinking about mine and my family and stuff the poor in some other country. You know, it's just an enormous faith to think that human beings will operate in terms of well-being of everyone else. And also this incredible faith in sitting down with people and persuading them, you know, that's a really bad idea, Charles Manson, to go out and slaughter a few people. This just doesn't work too well. This approach, for me, just has an extraordinarily faith. And how do you convince people if you don't have an absolute right and wrong? But anyway, here's the question that I would want to ask. And I was... it's a question I was asked by the president of the Atheist and Agnostic Society, wonderful title, in Cambridge University. And it was in a debate. And he said, and he quoted Bertrand Russell, actually, after the Second World War on the BBC, Russell said this: Dachau, the concentration camp, Dachau is wrong, is not a fact. Gravity, is a fact. But Dachau is wrong, is not a fact. I think it's wrong, but I can't prove it. Would you agree with that statement?
I don't know.
Well, take a stab. Where are you on that one?
Wow. Okay. I didn't know that saying I don't know and actually pausing to think is thinking not allowed. I mean,
thinking's allowed, but okay. saying I don't know fairly straightforward question. When you on your program you ask people questions, if they go to you I don't know, you usually mock them.
Well, what seems to not be allowed is anything other than an actual answer. It may be the case that the answer should be we don't know or we don't know yet. This appeal that you, this claim that you have that I have just enormous amounts of faith is laughable, because you actually said that I have enormous amount of faith that humans will operate on the basis of well-being. And no, I'm not saying that I have faith that they actually will.
You have faith that they can.
I have confidence that they can because I have evidence that they can. Faith is the excuse people give for believing something when they don't have evidence. My positions are based on evidence and reason and reality. I don't have to give faith as an excuse. Now, Bertrand Russell's statement about Dachau is wrong is not a fact. I'd have to know a little bit more about the context in which he was saying that to know whether or not I agree. I think I tend to agree. In the context that I think he meant it, but I may actually disagree with what he was saying, because I am of the opinion that because there are physical truths. Now, see, the trouble word here is wrong, and that's what I'm talking about with regard to Russell's context. Dachau is in conflict with the idea of well-being of both those individuals and society is a fact. A fact that is put forth by the idea that we are physical beings under the influence of physical laws. And so what hurts us is merely a physical fact about the universe. There's nothing, as a matter of fact, appealing to anything else would be in violation of methodological naturalism.
Okay, can I come back to that? I mean, the questions and answers thing. I do think questions deserve an answer. I think it's fair enough for us to say, yeah, I'm thinking about it and I don't know, so I accept that. What I don't accept is when people take the English language and mangle it. And I don't care that you're an American, you don't have the right to do that. Faith is not faith without evidence. Yeah, the Christian position on faith, the biblical position on faith, it's Richard Dawkins and the others who've just basically invented this idea of faith, that faith is in spite of or contrary to the evidence. Faith is based upon reason and evidence. You act upon it. All of us, everything that we do is a combination of faith based on reason or faith based upon reason. And so from a Christian perspective, if you're going to argue against a Christian perspective, my faith is based on reason and evidence.
So you can hear a bit of the hostility there. He asks Matt a question. Matt wants to think for a second. I mean, he springs this question and this statement that Matt has never heard. And he doesn't know the context of. He springs it on him, and then he's very impatient when he doesn't have an immediate answer. And I would go I would go ahead and call this David Robertson. So Mr. Robertson, I'll call him Mr. Robertson here. I would not call this being robust. That's not what I would use for that clip. He's fairly respectful for a lot of the debates. There's two episodes. But there's a couple other times where he gets to this level of arrogance and condescension. And so I would say that it's not unfair of me to take this clip because it's pretty representative. He goes between – here's what he does, and you can all listen and you tell me if I'm being unfair to Mr. Robertson. He goes – between being calmly condescending and sneaking in little jabs to this, which was sort of outwardly almost hostile in some ways. But then I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, okay, from the atheist perspective, we maybe if there's a flaw we have, you guys know me, hopefully you will agree that I usually try to give. I try to give the other side as much credit as I can. So I'm trying to look at both sides. And as an atheist, I think we tend to think of religion as something that is worthy of scorn. And a lot of times when I'm thinking of things like this, I imagine, well, what if the other person was talking about Holocaust denial? You know, what if the other person was saying the Holocaust didn't happen because, the Jews, they tend to conspire and they forge the history books, yada yada. They go through their evidence, and then I come back and I'm in disbelief, and I say, what are you talking about? I don't even know what you're saying. I mean, I would be, of course, very flustered. But if I were signing on to do a debate with someone who is a Holocaust denier, I obviously would prepare. I would try to prepare some basic case to, because you can't really. I guess just saying, dude, what do you mean? is probably not going to convince the other side. But I think people would forgive me for being arrogant and saying, oh, listen, let me spell it out for you, dummy. I probably wouldn't say that, but but for having a tone like this guy does. And so that's the part of me that thinks, well, it would be okay to be a bit arrogant, to be a bit short in this situation. But the funny thing is, Matt is so good at this. Matt Dillahunty, he doesn't even do that. I mean, he stays very calm the whole time. I think some of it has to do with the fact that they're on a Christian radio show. So Matt's sort of the outsider. And I think that also fuels this other guy. I think this guy needs to please his home crowd. So I start thinking about this. We need to just stop talking about the manner in which people are saying these things. It's very unimportant. I mean, short from yelling and physical violence, of course, is just absolutely out of the question. But when it comes to these debates, I would be very curious when he says here, I'll go back to his article. He said, atheists wrote in and said I was rude and nasty. I would be very curious. I would be very curious to see what these atheists who wrote in actually said, because I think that the accusation, "Hey, you're being rude," is usually given when you don't have a counterargument. When you have a counterargument, you give a counterargument. That's usually almost always how it works. I mean, that's why the religious side tends to fall back on things like, "Hey, you're offending my beliefs. You need to respect my beliefs," et cetera, et cetera. Because they don't have counterarguments, or they do, but then those are refuted and then they're not, you know, that's sort of an emotional response to try to get the conversation to end. And I don't hear atheists ever doing that. I've never once heard an atheist do that. Of course, it's not impossible, but it just seems to me that, I wonder if these atheists who wrote in said, "Hey, you're wrong in the following ways, and you were very rude," you know, like if they coupled it with an argument, because that would be the part that I would care about. I mean, I've said before, I wish that religious people were trying to convert everybody every day. And you all may disagree with me, but I just want the conversation to happen. I would love for a religious person to say, "You know what? I'm going to convince you that God exists." I would love for that to happen. That never happens. Does that ever happen to you, to any of you? Because if it does, you are lucky. Because what happens for me is everyone at work, I think of my own life, at work, for example, not as bad at my current job because it's a bigger place, but at my old job, when it was a smaller place and it was very outwardly religious, I would just try not to talk about it. I don't go around, especially at my job. I know that I need that there are people who are very offended by even the fact that I am an atheist. They just disregard me actually saying anything. Like, just being an atheist offends people. It's sad, but it's true. And so at my old work, what would happen to me is someone would maybe, I would eventually maybe say, like, "You know, I'm an atheist," if I was pressed. And then it's an anger, a shutdown, or it's like I'm just out of the circle. That's what happens, because they can't deal with it. They really, in my experience, haven't been able to deal with it. They never say, "You're an atheist? Oh, let's talk about the reasons for faith. Here, let me give you these arguments." That's just not how it works. You know, it's an emotional thing. Religion is a faith-based, it's a learned thing, pretty much, that you grow up with for the most part. And it's just not, you're not able, religious people aren't usually able to just engage intelligently with atheists. And I wish they were, because I would love to say, "Oh no, that argument doesn't work for this reason. That argument doesn't work for this reason." But I never get that chance. And so I would love that. So I would say that if I were the atheists who were writing these supposed letters and emails complaining or whatever, I don't even know that I would necessarily even bother complaining about this guy's tone. But when you listen to him, yes, he was very arrogant. And if I were to just give a critique of how he acted, I think the problem with how he's acting, above and beyond, look, I get it. He thinks he's right. He thinks that we're really dumb to not see that God exists, and we're incredibly arrogant. If you listen further on the debate, he says that when we, you know, Bertrand Russell's quote of, if he met God, what would he say? And he'd say, "Not enough evidence, God." This guy very condescendingly says, no, he wouldn't say that. God would shame him and would say, "You had all the evidence. Why didn't you, you know, why didn't you see it?" And it's incredible, incredible way of thinking. But anyway, he's very condescending, and I get it. He thinks we're stupid. He thinks we don't get it. He thinks we're willfully trying to disregard the truth. And so that's probably where that attitude comes from him. But here's the part. Here's where I will offer a criticism of Mr. Robertson in his tone. Because what I've been saying so far, although I am criticizing this guy because his arguments are stupid, I think we should be less obsessed with people's tone and how they say everything and how exactly they deliver things. I think we should be more concerned with what is said. But here's where I will criticize his tone. One thing you need to be careful of, if you're going to take this arrogant tone that he has, you better be damn sure you're at least hearing the other person. Because The arrogance, it seems to me, when I was thinking about it, arrogance sort of seems to correspond with how confident you are of your argument. You know, like in the case of the Holocaust denier, I think people would excuse arrogance if you were to debate someone like that, because it's just obvious. It's so obvious that it's like, well, yeah, you're not being unreasonable in dealing with sure, in an ideal world, no matter what the claim is, we'd all be robots and we'd all say, no, that is incorrect for these reasons. But the fact is, people have a way of pushing each other's buttons and things have a way of getting heated. And the history of how religion has controlled and still controls so much of our society colors all this and makes it very difficult to react with, no, respectfully, I disagree with your argument. You know, so in a perfect world, sure, we'd all be androids who made arguments in perfectly logical ways, and no emotion would be involved. But when it is involved, I think it has to do with, it would be excusable insofar as you are just absolutely confident of the facts. But the problem here is that even in the clip I played, he misunderstands Matt all the time. He doesn't. It's like he doesn't even hear the arguments properly. He misrepresents Matt's arguments back to him, but he does so in an arrogant, like, I can't believe you're so stupid that you believe this tone. So if it's the case that someone keeps telling, and Matt tells him this, Matt responds and says, "Look, I didn't say this. You're saying the wrong thing of what I said." So maybe once you start realizing, you start finding out that you're not even hearing the other person, you need to maybe wipe that arrogance off your tone, because then you're being arrogant and you're dismissing a claim that doesn't even exist. You know, all of a sudden, to use my example I keep using, if I just misunderstood the Holocaust denier, and it turns out the whole time he's actually saying something else. He's saying maybe the Holocaust was slightly different historically than I've been led to believe. Maybe instead of 6 million Jews, it was 5 million Jews. Then it's like, oh, well, hold on. I mean, I guess that's a little different. Let me, you know, I don't know. You see what I mean? Like once you realize, you know, that you're not exactly hearing this person correctly, and they say, no, you've misrepresented me. Let me go back and say, I think that the numbers were exaggerated in this particular place, like the count was done wrong. I don't know. I'm just coming up with a weird example off the top of my head. But I'm just using it to illustrate, oh, hold on, let me drop the arrogance. You don't double down with the arrogance. Well, it's just as dumb that you know, this guy over here is saying 5 million, you know, like, you need to go ahead and make sure you understand and you're listening to the other person before you step up that complete disregard, you know, disregard for what they're saying and that arrogance that you're right, even though you don't even have their claim yet. And the most insulting thing in this clip, which it's been minutes since I've played it, but it ended with this guy, David Robertson. It ended with him saying, I don't care if you – incredibly insulting. I don't care if you're American. You can't abuse the English language like that. Okay, so that's his emotional – he's really taking a tactic of being indignant and just – and insulting to Matt and just saying he's so stupid for using the word faith to mean belief without evidence. Now here's the problem, Mr. Robertson. The beginning of that clip, you said, literally, you said, the problem with being an atheist is I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. And I can't believe the level of faith. And he repeats this all the time. I can't believe the amount of faith Mr. Robertson has to be an atheist. It's just, you know, I don't have that kind of faith. I'm a skeptic. So wait a minute. You just said that Matt was absolutely a ignoramus and was abusing the English language by suggesting that faith was belief without evidence. But wait a minute, you just used it in that exact sense not 5 minutes ago, and you used it to insult Matt Moore by saying he has so much faith because he's an atheist. So if faith is belief with evidence, then I don't get it. So then you were complimenting him before, and you were saying you don't have enough belief with evidence to be an atheist, because that's a different story. So I love how not only is he – it's not like he said, let me clarify, I think I'm using the word faith in a different way. It's not like he said that. he used faith the same way Matt did. And then when Matt calls him out on faith being something without evidence, he gets all indignant and insulting and saying, I don't care if you're an American, you can't abuse the English language this way. That would be a little more than being robust, Mr. Robertson. So that would be my feeling on that. So to sum up, and this, of course, would have been better with David to keep me more on track. So I'll say that again. But I hope that I was able to say some things of interest to you guys. And to sum up, I will say that I am, especially in debates, I don't care that much about people's tone. I think that they look stupid. They will look stupid themselves if they have a bad tone. I think the problem comes from the fact that when you're having a debate where two views are just so at odds that literally – and you live your life around these views, there's no room for middle ground ever. It's not like one of these debaters can say, let me think about that. Oh, you might be right about that, because it's such a fear response for either of them. That I almost think, but I think Matt did an incredible job of not being in this instance, at least I'll speak for it. I listened to the entire debate. He was not insulting, I don't think, ever. I mean, he stood up for himself. But the other guy, Robertson, I think the problem is that so much of this debate thing that people do is not really debate. It's about who looks like they're more right. I mean, you cannot blink. The second you blink, people start to perceive like, oh, maybe he knows he's wrong about that. Wait, maybe he is wrong about that. Uh-oh, maybe he's losing this debate. It's just a staring contest. I mean, you just have to say enough things and sound absolutely certain so that any hesitance you show just makes it seem like you're wrong. And that's something that, of course, someone like Robertson, whose life and career and everything is built on religion, I mean, he just can't afford that. So I think that's where that comes from. And I will say, as I started to say earlier, to sum up, I personally, as an atheist, I'm not too worried about how people want to present their religious arguments to me. You can present your argument as though I'm the stupidest person, as long as you will listen to me. I have a problem with people who yell and yell and then don't even give me a chance to respond. That would be something I would have a huge problem with. But not if someone was rude when and if you want to have a problem with that, that's fine. I just think I don't even know what's to be gained from complaining about it. I mean, it makes you look like you don't have logic on your side. So that'll sum it up for me on this. I had more I wanted to say, but this is going long and I didn't want to turn it into an apologetics show, but in listening to this debate, boy, did it get me fired up. It just made me it gets my blood boiling when someone like this David Robertson guy is just so fundamentally wrong and so fundamentally arrogant in his wrongitude. It really fires one up. And it, as much as this show leans toward more measured atheism, I think, and it tends to, and I think that's David's influence, and I think that's also something I'm moving toward. I am becoming more and more measured, I think. Things like this make me think, wait a minute, there are a lot of people who are not only wrong, but arrogantly and fundamentally wrong about believing in an invisible man. And how ridiculous is that? You know, it's very tough. So this is the sort of thing that gets me thinking about that again. But okay, hopefully David will be back next week if everything all works out schedule wise and all that. I will thank you for bearing with me on my solo episode. I'm confident that it was not as good as if David would have been here, but I hope it was still enjoyable, and I will see you guys next episode.